at risk.
We continue with the conceptual framework.
Thank you, Hans. Good morning, everyone. We've got five papers for you today. The first one, Agenda Paper 10A, talks about the purpose and status of the conceptual framework. We then have a series of papers that talk about our approach to re-deliberations on the conceptual framework. Agenda Paper 10B talks in general terms about our approach to re-deliberations. 10C to 10E talk about the topics of measurement, reporting financial performance, and concepts for liabilities and equity. But we'll start controversially with Agenda Paper 10A, Purpose and Status of the Conceptual Framework, and I'll hand it over to Daniela.
Thanks, Rachel. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, as said, the paper is about the purpose and the status of the conceptual framework, but also deals with the approach for future revisions for the conceptual framework. I would like to start off with the purpose, or a general comment. We did not ask a specific question on any of those topics in the invitation to comment in the exposure draft. However, quite a few people commented on that, so we thought we'd bring back a paper to the board, basically confirming the proposals that we had in the exposure draft. The exposure draft proposed on the purpose of the conceptual framework set out in paragraph 6 to assist the board developing standards, assist preparers to develop accounting policies, and assist all parties to understand and interpret the standards. And respondents were broadly agreed with that, and for the reasons set out in paragraph 9 in that paper, the staff also believes that we should retain the purpose of the conceptual framework, and I would like to ask the board if you agree with that.
Just one thing to pause and think about, in light of the broader debate and discussion about the importance of disclosure we just had and the nature of the kind of information that is making its way into annual reports today. And there's been some thought leadership in this area by certain companies that published recently some integrated annual reports, fairly condensed. Whether or not business reporting is as equally important to our constituents and stakeholders as just pure financial reporting, and whether or not the framework should have a chapter to deal with broader business reporting, I think is something that, if in fact the framework is going to be this living document, should it maybe be considered, not today, but maybe tomorrow, because I think annual reports are evolving, and they're not just quote unquote dealing with financial reporting, but business implications of financial matters. It's all tied together. It's all integrated. So there have been some previous studies, as I'm sure Andrew is very familiar with. The ICAW did, a fantastic report going back, four or five years ago, that it in and of itself is a tour de force on the studies of business reporting. And there have been some great studies in that area. And I think it's at least worth considering, maybe not considered for this particular go-round on conceptual framework, but worth considering whether or not aspects of business reporting should in fact make their way into our conceptual framework.
Yes, I broadly agree. Well, I think I totally agree with the recommendations by the staff. And I see that many constituents also agree. But we had some who had some reasonable comments to make. One of the comments was whether we should focus just on the board and not talk about preparers or others' understanding. I've said it before, when I was a preparer, particularly dealing with new issues when we were doing public sector reporting and some issues that hadn't been considered, we often went back to the framework and often went back to the definition of an asset and a liability to determine what the accounting treatment should be. And so I think it is useful to prepare us. And I don't think it makes a big difference to what we put in the framework with having that in mind, I think. So it seems to me that's perfectly sensible. And the status, it's not a standard. I mean, Philippe raised earlier today the problems of endorsement and the like, and I agree with that. But I think, aside from that anyway, it's not a standard. I think we've said right through the discussion paper and the exposure draft that we leave ourselves the liberty to depart from the framework, but we should explain why we have. It's usually practical reasons that you do that. There are good practical reasons for doing it, and you explain them. I don't see anything wrong. And I think the framework, we've got to be careful, I think, about calling it a living document, but it can be changed. It's not set in stone, is more the way that I would look at it. And I know there's people, and I've had good debates with them over the years, who think quite differently, think it should be set in stone, should be a constitution, we should never deviate from it, etc., etc., but I'm not of that view.
Mary?
Daniela, one point that I'd like to ask you to comment about on, in this paper, which is paragraph 15, it says, 15 and 16. I'm trying to think, there's one place where where the staff said there were comments that constituents said X, we think you should go ahead and finalize, and there was no discussion of the reasons that constituents thought X.
Yeah, in the status and purpose section,
yes.
IT.
Yes.
Okay, well, we can discuss that as
okay.
Well. I was
sorry,
basically intending that we like have the purpose, say yes, we're happy with the purpose,
okay.
And then move on if
then
that's
hold
okay.
On.
Otherwise, I'm happy to.
Do you want to? Do you want to do all or? Do all or
sorry?
Do you want to follow Ian's lead and talk about the whole paper, or
we can talk about the whole paper.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about questions.
okay. Yeah. Okay.
Paper.
Absolutely,
and then
yeah.
It looks like people want to
yeah,
talk
maybe,
about the whole
maybe
package,
maybe we
so
do it that way. Okay, yeah. So I think yeah, we briefly discussed question one. The next section is about status and departures from the conceptual framework. Also here we got a broad agreement from respondents, and the proposals are basically the same then in the discussion paper. The status is the same then in the current conceptual framework, and we think the status of the framework worked quite well in practice. We set out a couple of other reasons in paragraph 15 to 17, and therefore we also recommend retaining the status of the conceptual framework, and also we have this proposal in the exposure draft that if the board departs from the conceptual framework, it needs to give the reasons in the basis for conclusions of doing so. That would be on that section, and the last section is revisions of the conceptual framework. We got a couple of comments that people were worried about that we would just updated too frequently, so they were not like against the proposal itself, but were just concerned that we like the board would just update it maybe like every half year rather than have it as like kind of a document with stable principles. We think, or the staff thinks, that we should retain the notion that it will be updated from time to time, but at the same time we would like to make a suggestion that we say in the basis for conclusions, or we give examples that might trigger a revision of the conceptual framework, and like some of the examples are set out in paragraph 20, A to C, and we would like to suggest that we add this to the basis to give the users of the conceptual framework maybe a bit more assurance that it won't be revised every half year, but only when those
Who could ever be worried about us changing things every half year? Also, the only parts of the conceptual framework that we have not revised is completely worthless, which is the chapter on capital maintenance. I find, it is. It's completely outdated. But why would we even have to say something about this? All our standards are revised from time to time.
I don't think we need to overwork it. I mean, those are good examples. It maybe helps, but I don't think it's critical. But I'd still repeat that we have to be careful about calling it a living document, because that could imply this.
That the rest is that.
Yeah.
It's a silly discussion.
Picking up on that last point, I agree that we are overworking this issue of exactly how do we refer to it. I think we've identified a number of areas, you know, in the other papers where we want to do more work, and I think that's when we should be explicit about the fact that that may result in changes to the conceptual framework, because we need to send a message about whether or not we will be constrained by the conceptual framework. And I'm looking at manual because I'm thinking in particular of FICE, but I don't think we have to make a big deal of it, and I think it's over the top to put an example. The point that I was trying to get to before and stumbling was paragraph 15 and 16 in terms of the status, and 16 says a few respondents expressed the view we should not be allowed to set future standards that deviate, and then just goes on to say, but the staff thinks we should be able to. I agree with the staff. I don't want to start a whole debate about whether we should or we shouldn't, but I'd be interested in understanding what reasons people gave for that, because I think that's something we should address in the basis, and we can only give reasons if we know what their thinking was.
There were actually little, or like not that many reasons. It was basically stating we would like a higher status of the framework. We don't want the board to depart, basically, because those comments were coming from countries where they have a constitution. So they are used to a constitution where you can't depart from, and that was the reason behind. I mean, I could only guess why they felt like that, maybe because they know what would happen then, and they are unsure what the board would do with the framework where they can potentially depart from. But there was not like...
So from their comments, you think they wanted us to treat this as if it were a constitution that could not be overridden. And I think some of the comments that you had in particular, the one about practical expedience, which are decisions reached at a standards level considering cost benefit, is the right response for why we don't put it on that status. But I just wanted to make sure that we knew what they were saying, so that we had.
It was basically the constitution behind, and there were only very very few comments. Maybe four comments.
The right to bear arms, common law people.
Only in the boardroom, though.
Jung Woo.
Yeah, just a minor comment on that question two, the second one.
Mm-hmm.
We should explain that departure in the basis for conclusions. So I'm saying this is a kind of a, I'm just uncomfortable with the word the should.
Mm-hmm.
Because the status or conceptual framework is just a kind of a, just a conceptual framework, but the expression is it looks like a kind of one standard.
Mm-hmm.
So is it okay with the word should? It's related to the status of the conceptual framework and our standard, you know, when you develop. So should might not be a right word.
What would you have instead?
Maybe recommend.
Could.
I guess, you know, as Mary said, maybe departure might not be easy to define. Inconsistency might not be easy to define from the conceptual framework if we go to the specific cases. So this is a kind of a new requirement for the board to make a kind of an explanation why we are departing from the conceptual framework. Sometimes it might not be easy to say something.
I agree that the should language, it sounds odd compared to the language that we use in the rest of the conceptual framework.
Right.
But to me, it would be extremely odd if we were departing from some aspect of the conceptual framework if we didn't explain the basis of conclusions. Because in theory and in practice, what we should be doing when developing standards is that we should be looking at the conceptual framework and developing those standards upwards from the conceptual framework. And when we hit a potential inconsistency, we should be explaining why we're making those decisions. So I think this will come automatically as the way, from the way in which we actually do our standard setting. And in a way, this statement that we should explain departures is a bit redundant, because we will be doing that in our basis for conclusions anyway. But I think it's a useful thing. I think a lot of the respondents to the exposure draft actually took quite a lot of comfort from that notion that we will explain when we do depart from an aspect of the conceptual framework.
Mark?
Thank you. Can I talk about question four? Yeah, I agree with question four and all the suggestions made. But I think we need to clarify which area of our draft is very firm and solid. And if we finalize it, it would be very stable. But at the same time, we have to make clear that which area is half open and what kind of discussion we are doing currently. So we have to make clear it. This is very essential.
Here this is adding insult to injury, I think, when you go down this track, that you have to identify, well, this is pretty shaky what we've written here, so we're going to do more work.
But
people know we are working on FICE, that's something yeah. to follow that. I highly doubt whether what will come out of it will lead to, it remains to be seen whether that will lead to a change in the conceptual framework, because I think that the way we're going there is a more practical solution than
but we already have existing inconsistencies.
Yeah, and Tuck, this is a statement of principle that's got to last the next 20 or 30 or 40 years. So to try and set out now which bits are set in stone and which bits are not set in stone.
But at the point of publishing it, we know this is the area we are not very much confident. We know this is the area we are very confident.
But things might change in 20 years' time.
Yeah, in 20 years' time, that's fine. But because we are providing some conceptual framework in public, and then in that case we have to make clear what area we are still discussing. Otherwise, people cannot know. People cannot rely on conceptual framework as a whole. So there are areas which we can say that you can depend on this area totally. However, this is the area we are still discussing. If we have that discussion at the concurrently, like FICE or performance reporting, we have to say it in at least in the basis. Otherwise, it's not responsible.
Can I ask one question on this? Yeah. Would you then like to have an exhaustive list in the basis for conclusions, which areas we're still working on, because what we're suggesting in 28 is kind of like saying in the basis that, for example, FICE, because we're quite far with that project.
Yeah, that is what I'm talking
about. Would you be happy with that?
Because currently, obviously, we are discussing FICE, and we are discussing performance reporting, and we are discussing disclosure framework. So this is the fact. So just explain the fact.
Edward?
Taka, I don't think it's necessarily in this section. This is first chapter or preface, I think, of the whole document. But inevitably we will mention what we want in the liability equity section. And we already discussed both in the conceptual framework and the FICE project. So your ideas will be somewhere in the basis. Mm-hmm. But in this section seems dangerous. We list some items, say this is open and then we will come back. You understand? This is a preface, a very brief description of the purpose and the status. And so you don't worry too much. And I would suggest there's no need to add the condition of the situations like trending, specifically when the board might change the amend the conceptual framework. I don't think it's necessary.
True.
I just had a small semantic point just to think about for the basis on question one. I basically agree with what you've got here, but I wasn't sure that we really be ranking who the conceptual framework is most important for, rather than just observing the fact that it's used for all of these purposes, all three purposes, and we seem to have the words equally important creeping in quite a bit, and I'm not sure that we need that or that we really are ranking it. So it's just important core.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'd avoid the word equally, I think.
I support the outcome and what Sue's just said on the ranking and because of what Ian said earlier, the answers to question one. I think this is going to be very important for you, not just us, but for other people. And I think we've talked about a couple of things in the last 2 days, like emissions and rate regulated, where this may well be a part of the thing that people use for the determination of what assets and liabilities are and the like. For that reason, I exactly and completely disagree with Tuck. I think the important thing for me is I wouldn't know how to interpret the fact when I'm looking at emissions that some part of the conceptual framework might be, I think you said, not as reliable as other parts or whatever the term was. I think once we publish this, that is the conceptual framework and it's out there and every part of it has absolute standing until such time as we go through a whole due process to rewrite some part of it. And I think to create any kind of idea that some of it is less important than other parts, I think creates more of a concern for me than anything else. And for that reason, my answers to your questions in three would have been no, no, and no. Yes, as I think Hans said earlier, any standard we write, we may well come back to and revisit at some point. But to suggest that we have a specific timetable or a specific plan or a specific driver of change, to me, makes no sense at all. As and when the time comes, the board will consider whether or not it makes sense to revisit the conceptual framework. But I don't think we should be setting it out as kind of something that is automatically triggered by some event or other event. And so I'd completely drop that section.
And by the way, the sections that need further work, it's not so much that we expect that will lead to wholesale changes of the decisions that we've made thus far, but that we will probably lead to more refinement.
I don't even know if we will change anything.
I
agreed with everything Pat said when Pat was talking earlier about we need to think about, except that I would have said that those things, being reactive to changes in disclosure practice, and if we think those things are going to, they shouldn't even be in the conceptual framework. The concepts are what we are going to deliver. How we deliver it and how business changes and the changes needs is how we change standards in the long term. But we need something that can actually survive longer than that.
I'm out.
If I want to be sure that just voice it thorough, integrally, I do think I understand what Taka has in mind, but I strongly disagree with him. And I do agree with Dara. I would just drop the last section. I don't think it's even necessary for us to express in any standard that at any point we can change them. This is our duty. If it's not appropriate anymore, we should change, we should update, we should enhance. So I don't think it's really necessary.
Okay, on question one, do we have support for that?
All in favor?
Question two, regarding overriding, etc.
All in favor?
Question three.
Do you agree on both questions and two?
Yes.
What?
Two questions, a number.
Yeah, that must be. We have agreement with both. So, question four.
There is no question three, for the record. It's important for people who are outside and here.
Yeah, so question three is actually question four.
Yeah,
I want to vote on question three.
Better object to it then.
Who is in favor of stating that it will be revised from time to time?
Eight in favor.
So that is
8-6.
Okay. So we're not going to make a list like Tuck. Stating the obvious. That's
stating the obvious.
People, because we've only done it once every, you know, in a long time, people are just asking to confirm that that's not necessarily the case.
We can start the introduction by saying that we are not confident that we have reached ultimate wisdom for centuries to come. Most likely, at a certain point, the conceptual framework might be changed, despite the brilliance of the board.
The second part.
The second part, yes.
Second part of four.
the examples?
Should we provide examples?
No, I would. Well, right. Who is in favour of suggestion two?
No. One.
Okay.
Thank you. In which case, can we move on to agenda paper 10B and UEF?
Thank you, Rachel. Agenda paper 10B discusses the approach to finalizing conceptual framework and also approach to analyzing effects of the conceptual framework. And I would like to discuss these two topics in turn. But before I move to the staff's proposed approach to re-deliberations, I would like to provide a quick update on the feedback we received from the Advisory Council and from the ASA for finalizing conceptual framework. And we will provide additional detail about this feedback when we introduce respective papers when necessary. So generally, Advisory Council broadly supported finalizing conceptual framework on a timely basis. They noted the proposals are an improvement and a step forward, and revised conceptual framework is needed without delay. They acknowledged that some areas of the conceptual framework could be developed further, for example, measurement, reporting financial performance, and distinction between liabilities and equity. But they also noted that what we have in the exposure draft is a step forward, and that the board can always come back and revisit conceptual framework in the future when the board's thinking develops. In terms of the notion of a conceptual framework as a living document, some advisory council members supported treating conceptual framework as a living document, and some cautioned the board against revising conceptual framework too frequently or too excessively. Most ASAF members also supported finalizing conceptual framework without delay. And most ASAF members also thought that the areas that could benefit from further work include measurement, reporting financial performance, and the distinction between liabilities and equity. However, ASAF members expressed different views about how much guidance should be included in the conceptual framework at this time. Some ASAF members supported finalizing conceptual framework based on the proposals in the exposure draft, including proposals on measurement and reporting financial performance. Some ASAF members ideally would like not to see any guidance on measurement or reporting financial performance in the conceptual framework at this time. This is so that the board does not limit any further work that the board might decide to undertake in those areas. However, those ASAF members could accept if we provided high-level guidance in the conceptual framework on measurement and reporting financial performance, as long as we are not going any further than the proposals and in the exposure draft. All ASAF members who commented on the distinction between liabilities and equity all supported the board's proposed approach for dealing with this topic in a separate research project. Similarly to the feedback from the Advisory Council, some ASAF members supported updating conceptual framework as the board thinking develops, but again, some cautioned the board against too frequent or too excessive revisions to the framework. And some ASAF members also suggested that the board should not describe a conceptual framework as a living document because they find the notion of living document confusing and unclear, and they think that it may imply more frequent revisions than the board actually has in mind. With that, I think that covers most of the main points made by the Advisory Council and the ASAF. In terms of the staff proposed approach to re-deliberations, we think that the board should re-deliberate the topics that are either proved controversial or those topics where new information became available. So for example, we think that the board should re-deliberate the proposals if many respondents to the exposure draft disagreed with those proposals, or if some respondents disagreed but also provided new arguments that the board has not considered in the past. Paragraph 9 in Agenda Paper 10B sets out the topics that the staff thinks the board should focus on in re-deliberations based on our initial analysis. On other topics, the staff plan to ask the board to confirm the proposals in the exposure draft, but we do not propose undertaking any additional significant analysis. And as a final note, at this meeting, we do not ask the board to discuss what actually should be included in the conceptual framework on the topics in paragraph 9. Rather, we just ask you if you agree with our proposed approach to redeliberations.
I don't disagree, but there is one comment in what you describe as matters to be rediscussed. You only focused on people who disagree. You seem to wish it, or where there are controversial arguments. But it may be that people agree with the first of the proposal, but wish to bring more substance to some of the proposals. And while not disagreeing, they say you could say it better, or you could add more flesh to the bone of the argument. So are we going to also consider those proposals?
Yes.
Although they agree with the substance.
Yes, and just
because the way you present it seems that we will discuss where people disagree or have new arguments for disagreeing. So I'm not sure about these positive proposals.
So if respondents generally agreed with the proposals, we still plan to ask the board to confirm if we would like to go forward with those proposals. But we do not propose any significant additional analysis. Obviously, on some particular topics, we might need to, you know, discuss some particular aspects.
I think we should at minimum consider those positive arguments where people say there is more you can say. And you could say it better, or because
I think if we could come to a situation where respondents have given us, you know, an additional argument that we could use in support of a particular position, then I think the papers would actually highlight that and might suggest actually adding that into the basis for conclusions that explains that particular position. I think all we're trying to say is that we don't want to bring back every single issue to the board. If we have broad agreement on particular topics, what we will do is we will ask the board to reconfirm essentially what we said in the exposure draft.
Well, let's take an example, and it's not time to discuss the detail, but just an example to illustrate what I want to say. Let's say people agree with the idea of bringing back stewardship. But if they have a view that stewardship is a bit different from our description of stewardship. So we all agree on having stewardship, but maybe that's not exactly the same context. How are we going to deal with those comments about different view of stewardship?
The answer to that, certainly on stewardship, is we are actually bringing a paper on stewardship which discusses the different views on stewardship, because we saw that although it's true to say that people broadly agreed with the notion of bringing some stewardship back, there were some differences in terms of what does stewardship actually mean, and I think we need to discuss that with the board. So I hopefully that answers your question.
So
we're just doing question one at the moment. Just out of interest, I wondered if you could confirm to me, I agree broadly with the way you're doing it, by the way, I think it's a good way of thinking about it. Just though, to remind myself, on the other topics, business activities and long-term investment, given the criteria that you have used to decide what comes back, was that because there was disagreement?
There was a level of disagreement, and specifically on business activities, there was some confusion about the terminology. So I think on those topics, it's particular aspects that we think might be worth looking at again, rather than a fundamental sort of reconsideration.
Right,
yeah.
Thank you.
Jamu?
Thank you. Yeah, this is a good analysis, but I'd like to suggest on paragraph 8, there is a A and B. There are some disagreements with some reservations. Another one, B is disagreements with some alternative suggestions and with some arguments that the board has not considered before. It seems to me, regardless of what reservations and what alternatives, if there are big disagreements with the exposure draft, then we should deliberate. That's my observation.
And that's what we're suggesting in paragraph 8A. But also, this is a very broad sort of approach as opposed to sort of a very specific and all-inclusive list of criteria. This is just how we think about the topics that we should bring back.
I see. So the first sentence of paragraph 8 is quite the principle. We should deliberate all the disagreements. Yeah, that's very good. But the examples are A, B, and C, D, E. If you are going to stick to that principle, it's okay, because these are just examples. Do you know what I mean? If there are, regardless if there are any the alternatives suggested from our constituents, if they disagree with our proposals, then we should deliver it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The topic centers of the paragraph is
the distinction important. Between A and B is that A is where we have significant disagreements. We have a lot of people out there saying, hold on a second, we disagree. They may not have put forward any new arguments to us, but they're saying, for all the reasons that we've stated in the past, we disagree with you. We think in those situations the board should re-deliberate. B, what B is saying is that if there are situations where people are saying, we might only have a few people saying they disagree, but they're coming up with new arguments and new suggestions that the board hasn't considered before, and new reasons for that disagreement, then again we think we should bring that back to the board. So that's the difference between A and B.
Yeah, I'm not saying the difference between the A and B. There's another type of C. Even though there's no reservations and no counter alternatives, no arguments. However, some majority people of our constituents, they disagree with our proposal. Then regardless of what they're
that's
what I'm saying. Yeah.
Gary.
I think we're just on question one now, correct?
We haven't voted on question.
No, but that's what we're holding just questions only on question one.
Yes.
Yeah. Quick question. On chapter three, the boundary of the reporting entity, I guess I'm asking about something that's not mentioned here. I seem to recall in there we had some words or phrases about combined and consolidating financial statements, and that didn't make it to your list here to re-deliberate. I mean, it's hard to see that those that ever would very commonly be general purpose financial statements, usually highly specialized. And are we going to discuss whether what we're going to do about those? It's not here on your list is the reason I'm asking.
There is some listed entities present combined financial statements for general use. Some listed companies.
Then it could be general purpose.
Yeah, well, if it is for the public, for investors, it has to be general purpose.
And I'm okay with it's really just sort of was conspicuous by its absence because certainly not the mainstream.
I made the same note. What about combined financial statements?
I think I can answer that, which is I think in three we probably, you've got it teed up for us to re-deliberate. I think when we do that, we will probably have to look at the comments that came in about whether or not it's appropriate to acknowledge combined financial statements in this chapter. And then I think the other paper and research projects has the feedback about suggesting that the board, that the board take up a project on combined financial statements. It's, I think it's one of the ones that staff recommend we don't consider further. But that's the other place that, combined will, I think, in the context of discussing that, other projects will touch on that.
It may be. It was conspicuous by its absence, at least to my thinking here.
We're trying to provide an exhaustive list of areas that we're going to consider. I think this is just based on initial analysis where we're going to be spending most of our efforts on these topics. Some other ones might come up. If they're not on this list, then we still got a lot of support. We're not just going to copy and paste what was in the exposure draft. We're going to bring that back just to reconfirm what was there. If any new arguments come up, we'd consider those.
Julie, I propose you go to question two.
Do we need to vote on
No.
Yes.
Okay. No. The question is, do you have any comments? We had comments and we delivered them. No.
Okay. Sounds good.
That's a weird possibly vote on that question.
We had comments, yes, something then we have to agree on that.
So, paragraphs 11 to 28 discuss our proposed approach to analyzing the effects of the conceptual framework, and those effects fall into three main groups: effects on future standard setting, inconsistencies between the conceptual framework and standards, and effects on preparers. So a very quick overview of the staff's proposed approach. Some respondents to the exposure draft ask the board to perform a more comprehensive analysis of the effects of the revised conceptual framework on future standard setting, or even to perform field testing of the proposals. We know that many of the concepts proposed in this exposure draft represent thought processes that the board would follow in setting standards, and we do not think that it would be possible to prejudge the judgments that the board would make in applying those thought processes. However, we know that some of the proposed concepts relate to definitions, for example, definitions of assets and liabilities, and we also know that some of the concerns and requests for field testing actually did relate to testing of definitions of assets and liabilities, and we therefore think it would be appropriate to perform more detailed analysis of the effects of those proposed definitions on the board's current projects. Moving on to inconsistencies. Generally, many respondents to the exposure draft agree that the board should not automatically revise or amend standards if they're inconsistent with aspects of the conceptual framework. However, some respondents ask the board to perform a more comprehensive analysis of such inconsistencies and also to discuss an approach to dealing with such inconsistencies. A few respondents also ask the board to align the terminology in standards with the terminology in the revised conceptual framework. We continue to think, and we know that many respondents supported that approach, that the board should not automatically amend the standards as a result of the revisions to the conceptual framework. However, we plan to ask the board whether the board would like to reconfirm or reconsider its decision not to align the terminology in standards and in the revised conceptual framework at this stage. We also plan to look at any additional inconsistencies that were proposed by the respondents to the exposure draft. And finally, moving on to the effects on preparers of the revised conceptual framework. Some respondents expressed concerns about unintended consequences that the revised conceptual framework may have for preparers who rely on the conceptual framework in developing their accounting policies. So, for example, a few respondents stated that that might lead to inappropriate recognition of a large number of intangible assets, such as customer relationship. The staff thinks that the circumstances where preparers would be directly affected by the revised conceptual framework are limited because existing standards deal with a broad range of circumstances. So, for example, recognition of intangible assets would be addressed by IS 38. However, we do note the concerns raised by the respondents, and we plan to look in more detail at the effects of the proposals on preparers, and we will reflect that in relevant papers for the board where necessary. With that, do you have any comments or questions on our proposed approach?
I agree with what you've said in the paper on inconsistencies and effects on preparers, but if I vote yes to question two, what am I signing up to in terms of field testing? So I wasn't sure where it landed, because I certainly agree that we should be thinking about the potential effect of what we're doing in terms of asset and liability definitions, etc. But if we start thinking about having to consider, for example, what the effect might be on some of the projects like pollutant pricing and rate regulated, it starts to feel like it might have timing implications. So I just wondered if you could tell me what the sort of staff thinking was if we say yes.
Right, well, what we got, we had a lot of people saying we're not quite sure what the implications of the proposed concepts and definitions of assets and liabilities would be. And what I felt was that we've done quite a lot of work already looking into what the implications would be. We had a paper on what the implications would be for all the transactions in the scope of IS 37, and I did a webinar with some other examples. And we've also been working with the pollutant pricing mechanism and RateRev teams to think about how the proposed concepts would feed into these future projects. So it's not that it would be a matter of probably pulling together quite a lot of the work that we've already done. And perhaps talking to the ASAF members about whether they agree with that would be the sort of implications that we're thinking of.
But wouldn't that material be important to be seen by the board before we actually make the decision?
Well, what I think
rather than afterwards.
What it would be possible to do would be, having seen all that, the board would then be asked to to look at the refinements to the probably more likely to be the guidance accompanying the definitions rather than the definitions themselves, although there might be the reference whether we need both present and past events might be something that has to come up again. But so yes, so it would be looking at all of that
as part of the redeliberation,
as part of the redeliberations, and possibly involving the ASAF to get their input before you make decisions. That's what I've had in mind anyway.
Yeah, so it would be an effective analysis as part of the decision making, and rather than after the decision making, which we tend to do, funnily enough.
Yeah, and it really reflects, I think, the fact that we've actually done quite a lot of this, and it's a matter of pulling it together and making
it visible.
Making it, not just even visible, but putting it all in one place so that you can see it from
above. I think it's also visible because I think people are worried about what we think, how we're going to apply these definitions, and if they can see
very worried about unintended consequences.
How we're using it, they might feel.
And there were some things where some of the fears were really far off where we would actually be thinking of going. For example, does this mean that we'll be changing and we'll have a new standard on deferred tax or something like that? And then
okay, thank you.
Gary?
So I have the same concern that Sue raised about what are we signing up for, the duration. I'm assuming whatever we do wouldn't have much of a delay in the timing of finishing this, I suppose. Got to wait to see what we see, but I'm hoping we just absorb it in the regular deliberations.
Okay.
The other question I had in this paragraph 11 in here, we talk about, and I have three, this meets, tend to meet the needs of investors, creditors, and others, but in the materiality practice statement, we narrowed that down to primary users and kind of said not all investors and not all creditors have the same information needs, and some are more important than others. It is there inconsistency in that, or we need to reconcile the two different views, do you think?
I think we've just used shorthand there. I don't think we intended them to be inconsistent. I think when we're generally talking about using financial statements, we are talking about the primary users. We're not talking about other users of financial statements.
Yeah, but the practice statement from Charlie did deliberately narrow that down. That said, not all investors, not all creditors, some of very niche, you know, information needs, but there's still technically an investor and a creditor.
Yeah.
I mean, I think paragraph 11 is actually just simply quoting from the invitation to comment, where perhaps the wording is not quite as precise as we have elsewhere in the document. So we'll look into that.
Okay.
I think in the document, we had a footnote that said after we introduced the primary users that when we talk about users, we are going to be talking about the
good
primary users.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Instead of repeating it every time.
Mary?
Commenting on two points, the field testing and how much effects analysis should be done of one of the other points you teed up. In terms of, quote, field testing, yes, shared the same concern. You've alleviated them with your comments. I think a couple things I'd say is, one, I think ASAF is the right body for doing the field testing, because I think we should be looking at the field testing primarily, really solely in the context of how standard setters, us, would use these definitions in standard setting. I don't think we should be trying to think of all the others who may find the conceptual framework useful and how they would work for it. So I suggest in focusing, you know, if we're doing it on standard setting use. And I think I would tee it up rather than saying how can we tune the guidance, etc. Not that we wouldn't, but I think it's almost a fatal flaw testing rather than, you know, much further explorations. The second thing, Julia, the effects and paragraph 13, while I agree with the staff proposal to not perform comprehensive analysis or field testing in terms of how would the definitions or other sections, you know, what would their impact be on future standard setting, which is, you know, which is what you said, I think I would express the reasoning differently. because I don't think people were actually asking us to predict what the outcome of a standards level project would be, but I think it's more, you know, what, and maybe they were, but I think what we should be saying is we think it's appropriate at this point to identify, and I think we largely have, where what areas the conceptual framework would suggest a different starting point for our, you know, deliberations versus saying, and we think in the environment that this would, you know, I don't think it's reasonable for anybody to expect us to predict the outcome, but I think we may be reading it to put them in the that's an unreasonable request, as opposed to where is there an apparent inconsistency either between where we've ended up in existing standards, which I think we've already included, or where would it imply a different starting point? Because I think the whole point about explain where we've deviated from the conceptual framework and standards level would then explain the path from here's where the conceptual framework, you know, would point you, and here's where we ended up.
I generally agree we should not have a comprehensive effective analysis on any possible consequence of standard setting project. On the paragraph 14 and 15, I have two worries. You know, because the two paragraphs particularly link to our discussions on 37 regulatory activities and the very tricky names, you know. Purely linked to definition discussion, you know, I feel quite tricky. Firstly, you know, as Mary suggested, whether we give people impression, you know, we revise this part of the concept may help solve the issues, you know, bother us for many years. I don't think we should give people such an impression. You know, we should be neutrally, you know, on the conceptual level. Of course, maybe the revision will help by the end, but I don't think that this stage we should give people such an impression. This is my first suggestion. It would be very tricky how we will write down, you know, such a discussion. And secondly, I also feel we should be very careful. All these three areas, I never feel it is only controversial over definition. It is all related to measurement. We may decide, for example, 37, we will tackle recognition issue this time or in the next project. But does not mean the 37 issues is only related to definition. And similarly, you know, the regulatory activity project and also the another project, not only related to definition and recognition, but also measurement. So we should be, I personally feel we should be very clear on this. Yeah, and particularly, you know, when we go out, people quite often ask questions, you know, the way go, you know, you change definition, whether you will open a door to recognize more or less. And quite often I say the conceptual framework provides a framework for us to make judgment, you know, on various concepts. Definition is only one. Measurement, recognition, and maybe others will have to take into consideration together. All these three areas are good examples, not only definition, but also recognition, measurement.
Yeah. I'll second these comments. Ian?
Yeah, I just want to go back to the field testing and timing. And so if you're going to use ASAP, and we want to stick to the timetable, then it has to be discussed at ASAP in July. So you haven't got much time. Because if the next ASAP after that's October, and you should be into drafting by then.
Okay.
Yeah.
No problem. It's not at all. You just have to write it up. So, okay.
No pressure.
This question we have to answer. We have to vote. We have to exercise our right to vote. So, do we agree with the proposed approach with all that has been said?
I do not agree, just for the record.
12 in favor.
All right. Next paper.
If we could move to agenda paper 10C and Andrew.
Thanks, Rachel, and good morning, everyone. In paper 10C, we're seeking the board's view on the direction of travel that we should set out on in looking at the measurement chapter. The board are well aware that the measurement chapter was perhaps one of the least popular aspects of the exposure act, and we've got a fairly strong message that further work is required. But I think one shouldn't forget that many of the key ideas of the exposure draft were broadly supported. People thought that the exposure draft set out broadly the right measurement bases and had some useful ideas as to the factors to consider when selecting between them. But there is a general view that the chapter needs to be rather more directional and some of the loose ends need to be closed off. To assist the board in its discussion with the paper identifies they're probably not the only approaches, there are probably many variants of them, one of which is to discard the measurement chapter, and when the revised framework is published, which we're assuming will be sometime next year, in other words, not too far away, there would simply be a blank, and then we would undertake some basic research that might be completed someday, and that could then be incorporated into the framework. I'd just like to comment on that, because that approach has been supported by some members of ASAF, and there was a fair bit of discussion of it at the ASAF meeting. I think it's fair to say that wasn't the majority view of the ASAF meeting, although it did take up quite a bit of the airtime. And we have talked to some of the people who are represented around the ASAF table, and they've agreed to work with us so that we can try to meet their concerns if we were to go down what the paper describes as the build approach. I think their main concerns are probably that what we would do would hardwire decisions that they might wish to see considered more carefully, and I suspect that one of their concerns is the emphasis on historical cost. The second approach that's set out in the paper is described as the retain, which basically says, well, let's see what comments we really do need to reflect, but broadly keep the measurement chapter largely as it is. And the third approach, which is the one that the staff recommend, I've described as the build approach. In other words, we take basic ideas that people agree with and see if we can make them, in some sense, rather more coherent and provide a chapter that would give some guidance. I'd just like, finally, to comment on paragraph 16F, or 16, rather, as a whole. I would emphasise that was intended as an illustration of what might be done under the build approach, rather than as the definitive plan. If the board agree that the build approach is the one to go down, then we will be discussing with board members and developing exactly how the build approach might be implemented. But I would now like to turn to comment on paragraph 16F, which I was slightly surprised to read when I reread the paper, when it talks about current values, exit values are more likely to be relevant for assets that may be sold. I think there's a missing thought there that current values would be relevant also for assets that produce discrete cash flows, generally speaking, at a very high level, and also for liabilities such as, for example, pension liabilities. So I hope that tees up your discussion.
Gregor?
You already say what I want to say. That is, you know, paragraph 16 give me impression, you know, we intend to revise too much on the basis of the ED. Mm. And I would rather prefer we constrain ourselves to revise, you know, if necessary. And I would agree approach C, but that paragraph will give me impression we change too much. It would be dangerous, you know, because people have so many different views on any of the concept, principles, on sentence, and we should stick on the ED and revise as necessary.
Yeah. Andrew, in your paper, there's no reference to how long a purchasee might take. Now, I get some comfort out of paragraph 24 that says, but I mean, are you thinking 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years? Because it makes a difference to our decision.
Yeah. I had been assuming that we would that the attempt would be to complete approach C contemporaneously with the existing timetable for the project.
So 3 months. Yeah, well, if you want to build it in and get it agreed at the board and get it, you've only got 3 months.
Our plan is to try and complete re-deliberations on the framework, looking at September, October.
Yeah.
And our intention with C would be to try and get that done within that time frame.
But it's going to lead, it could lead to a longer debate than a lot of the other, because it's a lot of new material that's never been considered before. So it may take more than one board meeting to get it through. And that's really tight.
It is, yes, that's true.
So I was veering to approach B basically on that basis. As I say, I take a bit, little bit of comfort out of paragraph 24, which says we can switch track if things are getting out of hand. But there's a lot of stuff to do and a lot of contentious issues to consider, and it seems just a bit tight to me.
I'm personally in favour of trying to do something and try to build up what we have, because I think there could be quite a considerable amount of support for the direction in which Andrew is going, and it's not exactly rocket science. And I privately and now publicly say to Andrew, try to go as far as you can and let them see whether it's perhaps too far, and we might even necessitate, well, I'm not going to use that word, but try to go as far as you can, because I also have the feeling that while there may be, you know, huge conceptual debates about preferences for measurement bases, in practice people are rather content where we are with mixed measurement, and there was broad support for mixed measurement, and I think that instinctively people feel comfortable with the choices we usually make in practice. So I think it should be able to, we should be able to distill the implicit arguments that we too often use implicitly into a more explicit text. So I would strongly favor to do a little bit more. I think we pulled back too far from the discussion paper. We should try to rebuild it. Stephen.
I'm happy to try and do more and go further and provide better guidance for the board. But I have concerns about this paragraph 16 and all of the things that are in here, and we've had a chat about current cost and the like. I just think this is a lot more than one meeting, a lot more than two meetings. I think it's more than 3 months. Didn't want to say we expose your hands, but I think a discussion of factors that would suggest how a selection might be made between historical and current cost, there was nothing on that in the exposure draft. I think that would be going much further than we have in the past. I'm very concerned about F. Little one, cost measures preferred until any increase in value is irreversible. That seems to me that a whole lot of financial assets which are currently at fair value change to cost. I mean, that's a massive issue. So I'm very concerned about all the things that are in there and the scope of these possible changes.
Mary?
I think I share some of Steve's concern. I think if the board today rejects A, discard and do nothing, then the question is, how best to manage how far we can get. And, you know, what Hans was talking about we maybe we, you know, in his view, we pulled back too far from the discussion paper and there's some material that can be incorporated. I think that's far less than C. Mm-hmm. And so C, you know, kind of makes you aware of how far we could go. But that seems to then overshoot picking up some of the stuff that we have talked about before. So one of the things I think I'd like the staff to consider is if we reject A and we want to do at least B, and we think that it's a question of how much further do we take B, rather than do we do B, or do we do something that goes off in a different direction and has a different set of conclusions, then maybe we should first try to agree what at a minimum we would want to put in, and then take some of these ideas and see if we can build them further in the context and the timeline of the whole package. And if we can, and we think it doesn't warrant re-exposure, great, and we can go ahead. And if we can't, then it's not wasted. But going to Ian's timing point, one of the things I was thinking through is, so if we use all the time we have available for measurement to try and get to C, and we decide at the end of that time frame being to finalize along with the rest of the conceptual framework, we then don't have any time left to go back and do B. And I think that's a problem that we want to avoid. So if we think they are consistent, then let's get the basic framework done and then see how far we can take it. And then on a very different point, in paragraph 7D, like David, you talk about entry-exit and entity-specific and non-entity-specific. I thought we always talked about entity-specific versus market participant. And the reason I'm pulling that up is both here and in 16 when you were talking about a range of views, I worry about us starting to create lots of different, we went from a menu of measurement bases down to two categories and then talk things within that. And I'm worried about starting to creep back to the menu.
Okay.
Tuck?
Yes, I just want to echo what Mary said. So I think we have to consider what is the priority, the time constraint or to achieve the better conceptual framework. And actually you talked about risk of re-exposure. And definitely, probably if we try to achieve the better one, then maybe we need re-exposure. So then what is the priority, to avoid re-exposure or we don't mind re-exposure? That is what we have to decide within a couple of board meetings.
Amaro?
Thanks, Hans. Much has been said already. I think, actually, myself, I started the paper with approach B, either B or C, because A, it's a no-go for me. This was a chapter that was well acknowledged by almost everyone that I talked about, that it was a much needed chapter in the conceptual framework. So not in having the chapter after suggesting it was a missing part of the conceptual framework, I think it's a very bad sign. So I was between approach B and C. And so I started out as approach B as being the one aligned with the time frame that we had for the project. But although not mentioned here, I had the behind my mind, I had something that was confirmed by Rachel. So if the staff is proposing trying an approach that is more robust compared to B in terms of in being responsive for the feedback that we received, naturally they see or they foresee they are going to do, they are able to do within the time frame of the project. Although the challenge posed in the points issued here, so I would naturally I am willing to give a go to approach C, with the warning that if the staff at some point foresees that it's not possible into the time frame, I would expect you to bring back to us and say, well, it's not really possible. We'll need to re-expose. It's we don't have the time to develop the concept as we envisage it in the principle. So, but I think I would naturally go have a goal in the port C.
Martin?
Like Amaro, I think we have to consider these proposals which were brought as a feedback to us on that, and I think it is, even if the time is constrained, and I think we, at least we have to discuss these things, because otherwise I think we're ignoring, I think, some concept really good feedback on our on our exposure draft, and therefore I would be in favor really of following the staff recommendation and going with approach C. And maybe if we then recognize or realize that after 2 or 3 months we cannot really continue, then we make a different decision, but at least I think we have to discuss these things which people have brought to us.
Gary?
Yes, I'd probably say I'm in like an aggressive B.
B prime.
I think B-prime. I agree with Stephen. If you took recommendation C to its fullest thing, this is not quick. And I just can't see it being 2 or 3 meetings. I can't see in the timeline, assuming you take all the points in here at heart and develop them the way they should be. What I would, I don't know why, we would drop this, but I think in B, I would probably be inclined to modify or expand a bit what we've got. I'll call for terms that are perhaps not well understood or not well defined, and that could be, entity versus non-entity specific. I'm not so sure value and use is well understood. Fulfillment value is may or may not be well understood depending on the context. So I think I'd be more inclined to develop those definitions a little bit further, and you don't necessarily, I think most people understand historical cost, could be the cost or could be depreciated or post-impaired cost. I think that's pretty well understood. I think most people probably understand fair value, and there's a lot of guidance in there in 13 and others. But I think some of these other concepts, which are nuances, but they're important, and I think they should be developed greater definitionally and then stop at that.
Thank you very much, Chair. I agree with Gary's and Mary's and talks, many others. I prefer the B rather than the C. And maybe, but we might have another place to discuss all the issues raised by constituents. So kind of another research project on measurement, maybe separating this to the FIES, data and equity classification. So I think, you said aggressive B, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds good. Basically, that might be a good solution.
Aggressive B or a prudent C? Okay, that seems to be a bit of consensus of the meeting. Yeah. My feeling about this issue is that there is broad consensus in the world about that cost may be the most cost efficient or usable measurement basis for assets that are used in combination with other assets, the whole spiel, and that for assets or liabilities that are actively traded or that are not used to make other products, probably some form of current measurement is in order, and that we drew back on in the conceptual framework. What I think is a bit of a missed opportunity is that there is still a group of people out there who call themselves long-term investors and who say, because we are long-term investors, we would like to rely more on cost and not on these funny daily fluctuations of the markets. So ultimately, the only thing that counts is how we market values only are important on the moment that we realize the value by selling it, which I think is completely erroneous, and we have not been able to give any sort of guidance on that. That I think is a big missed opportunity if we cannot say anything about that.
which has to do with the cost not being particularly irrelevant if the cash conversion cycle is extremely long and there are big value changes over time. So I was, it's not really an idea that we exposed, that's a bit perhaps implicitly. Mm-hmm. We could bring that forward a little bit more. Yeah. I think that would be very helpful. Mary?
It's a process question at this point on this paper. Like you, I feel from the discussion around the table that general leaning towards aggressive, you know, aggressive B. Mm-hmm. But if we're going to take a vote on all the other papers, it might, I don't know if the staff feels it would be helpful at least to have a vote, because I think everybody here is rejecting A, just to send a message that we've decided we're going to put something in the conceptual framework about measurement, and actually have a conclusion about that.
Yeah, so I don't think we need a vote on A, B, or C. I think the way that Ian summarized it was very good. We would like a prudent C or an aggressive B. You go figure it out. Okay, Andrew?
Yep, that's fine. Thank you, Hans. Thank
you. Do we want to use the word prudent like that?
It's a very joke.
Let's not get that update.
Cautious. Let's be cautious.
So, another term, aggressive B.
Okay, let's move on.
We move on to agenda paper 10B and back to you.
Thank you, Rachel. Reporting financial performance, another favorite topic. So just to remind you, as discussed in March, many respondents to the exposure draft did not support the proposals on reporting financial performance. They thought that they were insufficient for the board or inconceptual, or they disagreed with some of the proposals or particular aspects of the proposals. However, the reason respondents disagreed were different and no consensus on reporting financial performance emerged in the feedback that we received. Some respondents stated that they could agree with our proposals as a starting point and that the board could in the future revisit the conceptual framework and provide more guidance when the board's thinking develops. A few respondents also cautioned the board against prejudging the outcome of any further work on financial performance in the conceptual framework at this time. So based on the feedback received, we identified three approaches to re-deliberating financial performance. First approach is do nothing in the conceptual framework at this stage. Under this approach, conceptual framework would be issued without any guidance on reporting financial performance, and the board could consider whether it would like to start a project on reporting financial performance and update conceptual framework in the future. The main attraction of this approach would be that it reflects the lack of consensus, and it would not sort of limit any future work that the board might decide to undertake to a particular starting point. However, the disadvantage of this approach would be that it would represent a step backwards compared to the exposure draft, and it would provide no point of reference whatsoever to the board in the future in making decisions about reporting financial performance. Another approach would be to provide high-level guidance in the conceptual framework at the stage, and such high-level guidance would be based on the proposals in the exposure draft. What I would like to emphasize, however, here is that this approach is not the same as the built approach on measurement or even as retained approach on measurement. So I think here it would be a question of trying to distill the areas of agreement that we've heard in the feedback. So it wouldn't be providing additional guidance compared to what we did in the exposure draft. Rather, we might need to think about sort of scaling back and distilling the guidance and the conceptual framework to those elements where we feel there is a broad agreement. And needless to say, under this approach, the board could still decide in the future to do a project on reporting financial performance and update the conceptual framework as necessary. The main advantage of this approach is that it would represent a step forward compared to where we are today, and it would provide some point and some discipline for the board's future discussions on reporting financial performance. The disadvantage of this approach would be that it's not responsive, arguably it's not responsive to the feedback on the exposure draft, and also it's not completely free of risk of establishing a particular starting point for any further work that the board might decide to undertake. And lastly, another approach would be to attempt to provide more specific guidance in the conceptual framework at the stage in response to feedback received. However, realistically, any such guidance would have to be based on recent proposals by the board, so it's either they emphasizing the idea of dual measurement or going back to narrow approach to OCI, broad approach to OCI discussed in the discussion paper. And the staff does not really see a lot of merit in this approach. First of all, it would have to be based on the alternatives that the board already rejected, so we don't think such alternatives would be more acceptable for the board at this time. Also, we think that what any such approach would do would be shifting focus of the discussion rather than providing answers. So, for example, if we were to emphasize the idea of dual measurement, instead of debating whether item of income and expense should be included in OCI, the board would be debating whether dual measurement is appropriate in such circumstances, so it wouldn't really provide an answer. It would also lock the board to a particular starting point in any future work, and I think it would create a significant risk for the exposure. So to summarize, the staff can see merit both in approaches one and approach two, no guidance or high-level guidance, but on balance we think that high-level guidance would be a better approach because it would represent a step forward compared to where we are today. With that, I hand it over to the board.
Martin.
And I think it's very difficult to decide on that now, because without knowing what this high level guidance would be, and I think we will have a long debate what this high level guidance would be, and if we're doing in parallel then the performance reporting project, which we maybe decide in May, I would really prefer to do then approach one, which is don't give any guidance in this conceptual framework and focus on the performance reporting project. Because I think we will have a long debate what this high-level guidance is, and I think the outcome of that will not be very relevant, and therefore I think we should better spend the time on other things, and have we finalized that, then we maybe, if we have a good idea, then amend the conceptual framework based on the results, maybe on this project.
I strongly disagree with that. First of all, I think that the work we have done thus far is not is more meaningful than what many people think. I think the principles that we developed around profit or loss and OCI are significant. Perhaps we do not live up to them in practice. I've given many examples of that in several speeches, like pension liability, which obviously is very relevant for performance, but we exclude it from profit or loss. So I think for future standard setting, the principles that we have developed does give some guidance, which doesn't take away that we still have to develop a lot more work in the performance reporting project, otherwise we wouldn't be doing that work. And I also think that the staff sketches in 13B more or less what this work would entail, and it doesn't diverge so much from what we have done thus far. And I would also really recommend the staff to not make the same mistake as we did with measurement, which is to draw back too much just because people don't think we give the ultimate wisdom. We should not answer by not giving any wisdom at all. And I do think that what we have done is pretty useful, even though it doesn't give the answer that the ultimate answers that people would like to hear. Sue,
the way I read the high level guidance section, I'm not going to test whether it was a fair reading or not, was that you were suggesting basically to keep the key concepts that were in the document, for example, the sort of primacy of profit and loss and sort of a presumption, I don't know if you'll draft it that way, but recycling is something that we do, those sorts of things, and the fact that we sort of start with the understanding that you'd expect items of income and expense to go through P&L. So if I pick on a few key things,
yeah.
And if that was what you were intending, then I think maybe if that's still what the board thinks is the correct sort of ideas to have based on the feedback that we've got, I think confirming that that's what the board thinks is probably a helpful thing in terms of giving people clarity of our sort of mindset. So I think that approach would be a reasonable approach to go down, if that's what you mean. I don't see it as being potentially a whole load of rework to Martin's concern, given the way I read what you were suggesting. But I think the reality of that is that I think that the high-level guidance approach in here was sort of presented in a way that suggested that left us with quite a lot of freedom in the financial reporting, the performance reporting space. I'm not sure that that's true, given those things that we've said about primacy of P&L and recycling, etc. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, though, because that at least gives us a starting point to think about performance reporting. But I wouldn't go into it sort of believing that because we'd taken that approach that we sort of hadn't bound ourselves in any way when we get to performance reporting. So I think we need to have our eyes open. But I think that sort of for the same reasons that I supported the approach that was suggested for measurement of sort of working on what we've got and articulating it better. The approach I think is also a reasonable approach. So I'd go with the high level guidance approach.
No, I also supported the high level approach. Actually, from beginning, when we set a short-term the conceptual framework project, I didn't support to have a separate chapter on the performance, and even not support to have a separate chapter on presentation and disclosure, because you know I feel time is so limited. You know, we have to focus and constrain ourselves. But we already done, you know, published DP, published ED. Then I will feel based on what we have achieved and refined, convert into a final standard, the framework, I will feel it's okay. So high level, I will support. But different from some other things, you know, we clearly say that we will have a liability equity project ongoing, and we will have separate the primary financial statement project, you know, in the future. And I will predict a general consensus, that is, we should have a much reasonable, clearer subtotals in the income statement or profit loss and the same comprehensive income. And based on that, I feel, you know, one thing we might be, you know, do, this is my personal view, that is, we should soften the profit loss and the OCI debate. You know, in my view, you know, OCI or not is only one kind of classification within the state of comprehensive income. Or one subtotals. We stick too much on this. And some other, you know, subtotal will also be very useful, like operating income and others. So I would personally favor to soften a little bit based on what we already achieved.
That's the reason why you then want to have this high-level guidance, because if you soften it, we should not have this high-level guidance. That is my point.
Mary?
I also am supportive of approximately what's laid out here as high-level guidance, and I say approximately because of little things rather than big things. I think we should not conclude now, do nothing, you know, in the conceptual framework on this subject. So I want to try and do something, and I think trying to do something brings me to high-level guidance. I when I think about things like only, I'm trying to use the right word, report an item in OCI if it enhances the meaningfulness of P&L. As a measure of performance, that's qualitative rather than quantitative, but it's not a bad, you know, it's a good anchor to have to say, explain to me why you think this is the right thing. I also agree with staff recommendation of shifting, you know, let's have a discussion around moving from a rebuttable presumption about, you know, replacing them with principles. And the reason I say that is you could, is because elsewhere we've said that we want to reaffirm our decision that you have to explain why you have departed from the conceptual framework. And I think that's, you know, a rebuttable presumption within a you can depart if you explain kind of gives two layers, and I think sends a false signal about not wanting to anchor ourselves in the conceptual framework. So, and then I think in this area, tests like enhancing the meaningfulness of P&L as a measure of performance is a good anchor. And mindful of Sue's refresher on what we have and haven't decided in an agenda consult, assuming that we go ahead with the project on performance reporting, which we'll make a decision about next month, I would rather do it with the high-level principles that are in here to guide it. If at the end of that project we said X didn't work and it was a barrier rather than a help to making progress in performance reporting, then we can figure out what, if anything, we do, you know, in terms of the conceptual framework. But I'd rather start performance reporting having an anchor in the conceptual framework rather than having nothing. So that's, I think, you know, to Martin's point, why I'd rather do, you know, if we were to do that, I'd rather do it with a starting point rather than say, well, we're going to do this, so not do nothing here.
Stephen?
So I agree high level, but I might have a different idea as to what high level is. Mm-hmm. I think the framework should be that. It should be a framework and it should be concept. It shouldn't be standards level. So in this area, to my mind, standards level is the format of the primary financial statements, the ordering, the line items, the subtotals, the split of gains and losses between two sections of a statement or two statements. All of that, to my mind, is standards level. And we're going to talk about primary financial statements or performance reporting, whatever it is, as a project, and I support, always have felt that we should do more in the standards level area of this. I think that what we need in the framework is the principles that will help us decide on the ordering, the format, and the like. And those principles should be things like the aggregation and disaggregation that we should have, the principles of grouping things in a way that enhances the relevance, principles of thinking about showing separately gains and losses for incomplete recognition and measurement. So we have, you know, the hedge accounting and the like, and things are incomplete, so we need special considerations for presentation in that case. We need to think about principles for how to deal with situations where we feel two measurement bases is appropriate. So we need things which are high level, but we need them which are principles based. I disagreed with what we had in the exposure draft, in particular this statement that P&L is the primary source of information about performance, because I think that statement doesn't provide an anchor. I think it's meaningless, because unless you say what performance is, you can't make any use of that statement in trying to decide what goes into P&L. Take, for example, IFRS 5, discontinued operations. We separate that out in the P&L. We have an earnings per share metric before that item is added. Discontinued operations includes value changes, gains and losses on realization, which might have accrued over many years. It's an item of income and expense which isn't particularly useful in assessing performance, but we put it in the P&L. Well, if we're trying to say we remove things from P&L if it enhances the usefulness, well, to my mind, that means discontinued operations goes into OCI. I think we've got to think in more broad terms about how we think about the presentation of items of income and expense and not be constrained by this P&L, OCI, and the recycling. I wouldn't want us to constrain in what we do in the framework the outcome of any future project on performance reporting. So I would certainly not want to say we have a presumption that all things are recycled, because I think the whole question of recycling has to be central to that discussion that we have in performance reporting in the future. So high level, but I'm not quite sure my idea of high level is the same.
Can I ask Steve a question? So you say that you'd like high-level guidance, but given what you think that high-level guidance would be, doesn't that mean realistically that you're saying that at the moment we can't include any guidance in the conceptual framework because all of this is new?
I don't think anything I've said is new.
Well, new to what where we are in the project.
Well, what we've exposed for comments so far.
Nothing ever.
I just think that baking into the framework our existing thinking, but people have accused us of just trying to reverse engineer the framework to justify the existing way in which we think about OCI, and I think there's some truth in that.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case.
The mere fact of acknowledging the existence of OCI indicates that.
Some constituents, like the EFREC staff paper, which basically said the way that you now have these principles about P&L and OCI will lead to a much too sparse use of OCI. It's a very good sign, and you should rejoice that we have developed a principle that will make it more difficult for us to use OCI, because we have been using it too little.
I think that the principles we have in the ED could be read different ways by different future board members.
They were right. They were read correctly by people we meant to be reading this correctly.
Peter?
I think one of the most important parts of this is recycling, actually, because one of the most unsatisfactory parts of where we are at the moment is that the board has taken different decisions at different times because of different populations of board members with two completely opposite philosophies. So I think if the board is able to decide which way it goes on recycling, I think that's a big step forward. And I think if the board is likely to use OCI at all over the next few years while the potential project on primary financial statements is developed, that will help the board in its decision making in individual projects as we go forward.
I think the most useful line in one of the more useful lines in the concept framework as we have it is that we said if we can't find an instrument to recycle OCI, then probably it should not have been used to begin with.
Thank you. I half agree with what Stephen said, but I half strongly disagree with what Stephen said. And half I agree with Stephen's comment is without defining the performance, our high level guidance doesn't mean anything. So that's true, because we simply say this is the primary communication source to depict the performance, but we are not defining what's the performance, then it doesn't mean anything. That's true. However, I strongly disagree, not doing the high level, not providing high level guidance, because what happened in the past was IFRS ISB was heavily criticized because ISB do not really respect what the net profit is all about, what the profit loss is all about. And that's why some confusion in the IFRS 5 we have. And we don't know what the profit loss is, and we don't know what the OCI is. And we were so irresponsible. And that was heavily criticized by the constituents. And actually, the current wording of the conceptual framework is a kind of gateway to be responsible. we are going to be responsible, because in the outside world, actually many people think that profit loss is the most important factor. And this is the fact we cannot neglect. So therefore, we are trying to address that. So knowing that we know the constituents respect profit loss, then we would respect the profit loss. Then how can we do that? That is, leave it to the standard level, or it may come back to the conceptual framework. So therefore, the providing such kind of high-level guidance is really, really important.
Yes, and the irony is that many people who always insist on the significance of profit or loss want to take as much as possible out. And that's why the principle that we have developed is extremely valuable. Mary?
I'm a bit worried, both in terms of people trying to follow this discussion from outside and next steps, that we have ended up combining a discussion of should we try to do nothing or something with, if we do something, what is that something? And I think if we do something, what is that something? This is probably the trickiest ones of the subjects that the staff has identified for re-deliberations, in terms of it's not maybe as much how far can we take it, but you know, where was there agreement or disagreement, and where will the board have agreement or disagreement? So I think we have to remember that when, you know, if we ask the board to bring us back something, to try and have something in the conceptual framework on the subject, that we may or may not be able to reach agreement when we have the deliberations on what it is, but that we really should be trying to say, in light of all the feedback we've heard and the more significant levels of disagreement with our ED, should we be trying to put something in, or should we not? I still remain of the view that we should be trying to put something in, and I think high level is the right way to go, but I want to encourage the rest of us to specify which point we're talking about.
Pat?
Hans, you referenced one comment letter from FREG. I read almost every comment letter on this project. I had the time between November and January, as Rachel knows, we talk quite often. And the reason I did so is because I wanted to survey or review the people who agreed or disagreed with my alternative views.
It's all about you.
So I can offer you some letters that present the other side of the view that FREG has provided. I'm not going to cite them, but there was more than one. The question I think that we have to ask ourselves in this area, though, is do we want management intent, no matter how you frame it, how you describe it, management intent to be a basis for performance reporting and measurement? And right now, the principles that we've just been discussing in 10C and 10D are going to provide extraordinary management intent for example, what's in P&L versus OCI. This whole, does it enhance the relevance, is so ethereal, it's so high in the clouds. If FREG is concerned that is going to reduce the flexibility, then, you know, I don't know what is more flexible, to be quite honest. So it, when we comes to...
Sorry, Pat, to interrupt, but the decision if something is put in OCI or P&L is strictly disciplined by the standards. It has nothing to do with management.
Pat's talking about it. I believe it does, because the principle as it's described, enhancing relevance, in my mind, is in the eyes of management.
They're not going to be able to say, well, I think discontinued operations is doesn't say
no,
much.
No, but the board is.
By the way, I think it's very important information.
But the board is.
No, but it's not. They're not going to have the liberty to say, well, this is what I read in a conceptual framework, so I'm going to put it in OCI. Obviously, not going to happen.
No, I completely disagree with you. You are drafting a principle here that is saying if it enhances the relevance, okay, of income and expense in one versus the other, that's where you place it. Okay, so you're going to write a standard to that effect someday down the road.
Well, that's something else. I don't think we'll ever.
Payers will either agree or disagree with you on that. That's how they will influence that process. Likewise, the choice of measurement principles are going to be determined largely around management intent in terms of how it affects the business activities, how it contributes to the cash flows of the enterprise. That's nothing more than management intent. There's no objectivity in that. So I cannot see how you can continue to just promote these ideas and say we're improving financial reporting when in fact there are many, many comment letters that suggest you need to do more homework here. You need to dig deeper. Where's the rush? Why do we have to get this project done by October or November? I don't understand that at all. This project will make or break the reputation of this board.
So, Patrick, your view at the moment, though, is that you would say we do need to do this as part of a conceptual framework.
Absolutely.
Irrespective of how long it takes. And from your perspective, there's no real need to get a conceptual framework out there.
Not in 2016. If it takes to 2017, so be it. But let's make sure we have really good, robust, sound principles. And as Stephen said, there's high level and then there's high level. And a lot of the ideas that we offered in the alternative view in terms of characteristics of income and expense, those are really useful ideas in my view, and other people agree, for disaggregating between P&L and OCI. They can be used.
It sounded to me like Stephen was suggesting, though, that we might step into less detailed space, and it sounds to me like you said.
No. I would. No, that's not true at all. Read the alternative view, okay, that is in the basis for conclusions. I'm not saying anything more than that, but that's a long way from where we are today, improving the relevance, which is completely within the mind's eye of the preparer, or the standard setter in this case. I mean, how would you apply that, Darrell? Give me an example of how you would apply it improves the relevance.
I think every time we think about a decision here, we're thinking about presenting more relevant financial statements. We think about rate regulator, we think about missions, we think about all these standards.
But
providing information that is more relevant.
But you supported the use of OCI for the changes in the liability of the discount rate, in insurance. Can you explain to me how that increased the relevance of the financial statements? You should be able to do so.
On balance? Because we're using a current value balance sheet, okay? We're getting both cost and current value information in the statement of comprehensive income. That's the basis.
Well, I think it's a lousy basis.
This approach won't get you there. Wouldn't get you there.
No, I think probably this approach would not get you in OCI to begin with.
Yeah.
Because I don't, you will probably...
But it wouldn't get you current value information either.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, no, because you'll argue it won't enhance the relevance.
Then we're going back to the previous chapter with the measurement. If we have some broad...
They're connected. You can't separate them.
If we have some broad principles about measurement that, for example, say that if you hold a liability over a very long time and they're vulnerable to the value changes, then probably current measurement is the best answer, which is basically the philosophy around the... below the whole standard. We will get there, no problem. But
this will be a barrier to the use of current values, but this principle, because they will argue that current value information, okay, will detract from P&L, and hence it won't be relevant.
Sue?
Before we're asked to vote on this, and it sort of partly follows up on Mary's comment about not confusing people, because I wasn't intending to confuse people, but I think we have to be careful. If the board is asked to vote on whether they support high-level guidance or not, which I think is the question,
Yeah.
I think people could be voting for different things. I think there's a risk that Steve, for example, might vote for high-level guidance on the basis on the basis that it's high level guidance of a particular nature, and others could be voting for high level guidance on the basis that they think it's a rearticulation of broadly what was in the exposure draft, and that might not be very helpful for the staff who are going to then go and take that and their assumption of what it meant and driving this.
I read this this paper as saying, let's not stray too far from where we were, and that's what I would support.
Because I think, and I'm not saying this to be difficult, Steve, so take this the right way, I think what you would be suggesting is closer to what the staff would have described as no guidance, because it's sort of no guidance today because you'd want more time to do a more comprehensive review of what the ultimate steer should be given to people, which is why Martin voted for no guidance.
Yeah. I guess you're right that I'm closer than... My big concern is actually the recycling thing, because I think that's key to all of this. You know, the insurance problem, it's not so much using OCI, it's actually the recycling, the implicit recycling insurance, which is the real problem, because you get back in future periods stuff that happened in the past, and it just makes a nonsense then of the resulting P&L. And my concern is that we put a high-level guidance in the framework that has a presumption of recycling, which I think will be the worst outcome.
So you're not this guidance. Is your vote.
That's why I'm concerned about what the high-level guidance is going to say.
Yeah, except it's the content.
Steve, so you don't want any recycling?
No, I'm not saying... That's why I think we have to have a better debate about how we report the performance and the components of performance overall. We can't solve this within the framework project.
That's why, you know, I didn't agree with Peter, because I think this whole recycling issue is tricky and secondary, I would say. I would rather not have principles about it.
But it's recycling or not has such a big impact on the P&L that I think it's central to this whole issue.
And on the relevance of people.
Yeah.
That is the point.
So, you know, if a good principle would be if recycling of OCI distorts P&L, then probably OCI is not a good answer to begin with.
But we wouldn't have current value measurements without OCI. Yeah.
I don't find that a very conceptually strong argument, Pat. We need to work a couple of more years on that. But
could you perhaps clarify what we mean by high-level guidance so that it's clear what we're voting on?
Yes. So I think there are a couple of sort of main observations that I would like to make. Obviously, what specifically is high-level guidance, we will have to explore in the future papers that we'll bring to you. I think what is very important for us to understand now for writing future papers is that we are not taking no guidance approach, and we are not doing something altogether different from what we did in the exposure draft. So we're not doing dual measurement, or we're not doing transitory measurements and the rest of the proposals in the discussion paper. And then I agree with how Hans and Sue sort of read paragraph 13, I think it is, of the staff paper. So it will be broadly around what we had in the exposure draft, but we will need to think carefully about whether and how and which aspects we need to tweak to sort of reflect more consensus than what we had in the exposure draft. As an example, there were a few people who were saying that rebuttable presumption is not an appropriate tool for a conceptual framework. Instead, you need principles. So that is one example of what we can look at. And it's not changing the fact that we still intend P&L to be as inclusive as possible and OCI to be rare, but it's articulating it slightly differently in a way that is more appropriate for a framework. Equally, to Steve's point, I think we already have the ideas of classification and aggregation and disaggregation in the conceptual framework, but perhaps they're not as visible and as prominent as they could be. So perhaps we could consider whether we can articulate it in a little bit more visible way.
Steve's point's more fundamental than that, because I think he'd rather rely on the principles of aggregation, disaggregation, etc., and therefore not have to say anything about the primacy of P&L. So I don't think we should oversell what you might bring back on your current thinking that it would satisfy Steve, because I'm not sure that it
no,
would.
No, I'm not implying, I'm not trying to.
I think it's clear now what the choice is. It's either take it out completely or be live more or less with what we have achieved and making it a little bit better.
That, Hans, I think that second bit goes too far, because thinking about what Julia was just saying, I think it's leave it out entirely or commit to re-deliberating, and that I would regard this as a list of the issues the staff plans to bring back to us, you know, with further analysis, to ask us for a vote about whether or not to keep it in. It's a list of issues. We aren't pre-committing that this will have this package, and that was my concern about what you just said.
Okay. Philippe, and let's then come to a vote.
Yeah, I think I can go along with the staff recommendation to say where we are, basically. And a comment I would like to make about recycling. Yes, recycling from OCI to PNL may distort the view of current performance in the PNL only if that is hidden in the PNL. And if it is properly disaggregated, presented, highlighted in the PNL as being a result of recycling, maybe it doesn't distort that much. Because to a certain extent, the phenomenon of recycling also has some information value. Something is recycled because something happened, if we know it. Otherwise, we don't recycle. But if we know it, the fact that there is recycling is an element of information that is important to users, I believe. So the question is, how do we present that in the P&L? And this is another project, presentation of performance, presentation of financial statements. So I think we can make further progress on the OCI recycling issue only at the same time we do work on the P&L presentation. Not ahead of it, but in parallel. Because I think it goes hand in hand with presentation, disaggregation, intermediate levels of performance, operating profit, non-recurring, etc., is very much linked to the idea of recycling to a certain extent. Where do we put recycled items in the P&L? Is it above the line or above operating profit, below the line, somewhere else? That we don't know at the moment because we have not done the work. So I think I will not try to progress further the idea of recycling and OCI without looking at the broad picture. How do we present performance in the set of P&L and OCI statements?
Okay. With the understanding, the improved understanding we have reached in this discussion of what the staff is proposing to bring, is that what we can agree with?
Nine in favor.
Okay. All right. Liabilities and equity.
Okay. Thank you, Hans. So turning to agenda paper 10E, which discusses our approach to re-deliberations on liabilities and equity. Consistent with some feedback that we had from board members at the last meeting, what we've done is we've looked at both the areas that relate to the classification of liabilities and equity, but also at the areas that relate to some of the other work that we did on liabilities, especially regarding the guidance on present obligation. So I'm going to be presenting the first part, and then I'm going to pass over to Joan, and she's going to present the second part. So the first part is in paragraph 6 to 20. As a reminder, of course, it's well documented that the ED did not include any proposals to address problems with classifying claims as liabilities or equity. We are currently undertaking that work as part of the FIAS project, where the board's considering both improvements to IAS 32 and to the potentially to the conceptual framework, depending on the outcome of that research. So this means at some future time the board might return to the conceptual framework and, depending on that outcome, makes a propose to add a project to make some amendments to the conceptual framework. In terms of timing, we have not yet exposed any of that those proposals that we're developing as part of that project for comments. We think that waiting for that work to be completed would add a significant delay to the conceptual framework project. So basically we're proposing that to confirm the approach that we took, the board took in the exposure draft, which is set out in paragraph 20. So that we do not develop concepts to address challenges that arise in classifying liabilities and equity, and we'll do that as part of the financial instruments with the characteristics of equity research project, acknowledging that one outcome will be the possibility that we'll return to the conceptual framework and make amendments if necessary, and we'll simply explain that approach in the basic four conclusions when we publish the exposure draft. I'll turn it over to for comments before we take the vote.
I strongly agree. I think
more succinct, please.
Yeah. He asked for us to comment, so but just one additional comment why I strongly agree. I think with the FIES project we have the chance to explore more thoroughly the issues of the classification, especially because we have more freedom to explore using examples with instruments that we already know or identify in the near future. So I think this is the right and proper way to pursue the conceptual framework.
Sue?
My answer to question one partly depends on question two, but because I really liked the way that you the staff articulated in this paper the trouble, because I agree that broadly speaking you can look at them separately, but where we come into a sort of consequences is because even though the practical ability to avoid stuff was really to do with identification, and I think you have put it well in this paper, it becomes something to do with classification when you get to financial instruments, because liabilities and equities are equities are residual of the liabilities, so it has consequences. So I'm completely fine now that we've got to the point we have with doing these two things separately, as long as when we're thinking about practical ability to avoid, we've got at least financial liabilities in mind, so that we reduce the risk as much as possible of making changes to the definition there that we have to circle back and change because of the FIES project. So it sort of depends on how much peeking ahead you're going to do when you're doing the conceptual framework discussions to at least be thinking about financial liabilities. You're looking at me, but you're not responding to me. You're nodding.
I don't know. I wasn't sure there was a question.
The way that we've tried to articulate it is that there's two sets of problems, and I think for some of the problems to do with classification, they have nothing to do with the stuff that Joan's doing, and likewise some of the stuff that we're doing with the present obligation, the identification of the liabilities, that also has nothing to do with classification.
But there is
an overlap, and I think it's a question of managing that. So I don't think, and we'll probably get to that when Joan presents the second half, I don't think that means we need to do all of FIES as part of this project. Neither does it mean that we kind of put all of the liabilities as part of the FIES project. I think we just need to see how far we can take the concepts, thinking about the classification issues as we go. And that's going to inform the FIES project as well, whether we incorporate some of those concepts as part of our discussions. And we had a preliminary discussion back in February, and we're going to expand on that in the future to think about it in a bit more detail once we develop the concepts a bit further.
Because I think the reality is that some of the concepts that you've been developing or we've been developing in FIES are going to solve some of the areas of tension we've traditionally had. Because if we go ahead with the sort of idea that, for example, non-cumulative preference shares, we change the way we think about those.
Cumulative preference shares, if we think about resets, change the ways
we think about those, and we change the way we think about resets and those sorts of things, so that they would tend to be liabilities anyway, with the thinking and FIES still to be exposed, etc. It takes some of the tension off the economic compulsion debate, which is where a lot of the overlap is. So it may mean that the reality is that the no practical ability question sort of becomes less relevant for financial instruments anyway. But it's sort of keeping an eye on that sort of thing that I want to be sure of.
Okay, do we agree with the staff's recommendation?
All in favour.
We've already sort of moved forward a little bit into the second section, but basically the second section is considering if you're not addressing classification as part of this project, what should the approach be for concepts to address other problems in identifying liabilities? And the two options that are discussed in the paper are set out in paragraph 23. The first one would be to continue as you were, so proceed with the exposure draft proposal to add new concepts to the conceptual framework as part of this project. But the alternative would be to wait and not add the concepts now, but to continue to develop them in parallel with the FICE project and add them to the conceptual framework at a later date. And the reasons for waiting I've set out in paragraph 32. But the main one being that the board has developed these concepts on the meaning of present obligation, etc., to assist in identifying really when some obligations arise, particularly in the context of non-financial obligations. And you haven't really considered yet whether the concepts would also be suitable for classification. And what we picked up in the responses to the exposure draft was that there are different views on whether they would be or not. Against waiting are the arguments in paragraph 35, and I think the main one is that the concepts that we've developed so far will be useful now for a number of projects, and these are projects where people have said to us, don't proceed with these decisions on these projects, do the concepts first, and if we then defer the concepts, we'd be in the position of either having to do these projects without concepts or hold back these other projects. And so for the reasons of paragraph 37, the staff are recommending that you continue to develop the concepts to address problems in identifying liabilities as part of this project, but taking into consideration exactly the sort of points that Sue was making, that as we're doing so, we're considering refinements to reduce the risks that of the need for changes at a later date. The topic did come up during the ASAF meeting. One of the ASAF members, who I think has never been particularly happy with the concepts anyway, thinks that a lot more work is needed on them and would defer them until the FICE project. And there was one ASAF member who's, without specifically talking about these particular concepts, would be very reluctant to put anything into the conceptual framework now if there's a reasonable risk that it will need to be changed soon. But others, and there were a few who said yes, there was a bit more work needed done on the liability concept, but thought it could be done within the time frame of this project and would prefer. So, open for discussion.
Well, I think I totally agree with the staff proposal. I think the FICE project is not about whether or not a claim exists. It's about how you describe the claim as being a liability or equity. Where we can make progress, as you propose, is to help determine when a claim does exist. And the second question, for some of them, whether it is called liability or equity. But I think we need to make urgently progress on the definition on when a claim does exist, why it does exist, from which point it does exist, and maybe for some to be described in the FICE project as which nature we put, which qualifications we put on them. So I think your analysis is just perfect, and I totally support.
Sue?
I agree. I think that this is a sort of magic way of dealing with this, and also helping deal with the timing, is putting the emphasis on the identification of whether or not a claim exists, which isn't really a question in financial instrument land, because you know you've issued an instrument, that question's sort of a no-brainer. And so taking the pressure off the use of this distinction, I think, will help a lot. So I think, yeah, very good idea.
Mary?
Very bad idea. Just to take the opposite view. No, I really value and think there's been tremendous progress made in thinking around the area for non-financial instrument liabilities by the work on, that was in the ED around when do you have an obligation if there is uncertainty. I can see the appeal of saying, with non-FI in mind, let's go ahead finalize that as part of the conceptual framework that then provides a platform for, you know, as Philippe said, things that he thinks need urgently to be done. But I think critical within the things that need urgently to be done is the concept of economic compulsion in the context of non-FI will become the basis, the platform for a lot of decisions, because I think a lot of the thinking about why do you have no realistic alternative is because you will be economically compelled to act in a certain way. And if we build up a whole section of non-FI on the basis of economic compulsion, I think it will put a lot of strain on what we can and can't decide in the context of financial instruments with characteristics of equity. Therefore, I have hesitation about setting things up to go full steam ahead when we're exploring exactly that same issue. You know, when, you know, in FICE and admittedly in a classification setting. So my preference, while very much wanting to finalize, you know, the material that's been developed, is to hold off for the reasons you laid out here. To keep FI and non-FI worlds aligned. And that may mean some delay in things that people think are urgent in the non-FI world. Okay, so with preaching about that, one thing of, you know, that's my take. I think it's better project management as well to say we're going to look at conceptual rather than conforming changes to, you know, to the definition of liability. By conforming, I mean, if we do something to asset that is, let's say, around resources, would we also do it now? To look at it once and have the debate, the final debate once rather than repeatedly. But the other, continuing with the project management theme, please, paragraph 34. Can we learn from our past experiences? Our history is littered with, we'll put into something final the thinking for a project that's in progress elsewhere, where we've gotten so far. I think of, for example, the SME the chapter on income taxes built on the ED that everybody knew was about to go final. Let's not anticipate things until they are final if they're going to be the basis. So please put a big X through paragraph 34.
Gary?
Yep. Can I just ask a question, Mary? Are you solely concerned about the economic compulsion bits of the additional guidance, or are you talking about the guidance on present obligation as a whole?
It is economic compulsion, but I maybe I've not been enlightened yet, but I don't see how I can isolate the consideration of economic compulsion in the non-FI bit from the general consideration of a key articulation, which is no realistic alternative. And that's why I say I think it's a hold on the whole, rather than just saying we'll keep this economic compulsion isolated. Sorry, in the non-FI piece.
Wait, go off?
Can I go?
No, mine is... No. Oh, sorry, Gary.
Put my thing up. Just very quickly, I actually agree with the support the staff's recommendation, and I actually rather liked, and when we published the definition of a liability that we had in the conceptual framework, ED. I mean, yeah, of course, we can work on no practicability or economic compulsion. I think in general it works, and I'll defer to others if it doesn't work so well in an FI context. So I think we should be able to make it work. The other thing is, I read this paper and some other papers. We get into the circular argument here. We'll wait for FICE to get done, or wait for performance reporting to get done, and go to those projects and wait for the conceptual framework to get done. Get the circular logic project after project. Nothing will ever get done. And of course, some people might think that's a good thing, but I don't think people at this table do. And I think the conceptual framework becomes the anchor, and I would call it the independent, you know, variable, and the others are perhaps, if anything, are more dependent on the conceptual framework than the other way around. So I think we go forward.
No, I agree to carve out anything related to liability equity aspect, but totally, you know, suspend the discussions on the present obligation seems you're not so constructive. You know, I think people generally agree with what we already done, and this part when I discuss with our constituency, people feel is one of the most substantial efforts we already done. Mm. So it seems quite, you know, unhelpful to suspend. But if we do want to suspend, I feel it is put into liability equity project seems quite odd. You know, this discussion is wider than liability equity. Mm. You know, different scope. And we suspend, and in the future, combined with liability, the equity project, they are totally different objective, different scope. And assume we suspend to that part, then people say, wait a minute, you suspend for a long time, we want to re-debate, and on that part, what will happen, I don't know. So yeah, in short, I will support to finalize this piece, and also agree to carve out anything related to liability equity. It's okay.
Okay. Can we support staff's recommendation?
13 in favour.
Okay, then we are ready for lunch. Shall we continue for 2?